And we are going to begin with the landing accomplishment. Strength of the volunteer chair.
We acknowledge that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land, and in accordance with their tradition, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities, the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples.
Thank you so much. Now we will proceed with the roll call.
Heather Brent.
Present.
Amelia Kong.
Present.
Jay Langdon.
Present.
Alinali de la Lobos.
Present.
Recording in progress.
David Delgado. J.R. Hall.
Present.
Maria Salazar Falon. Michael Snyder.
Present.
Mary Bravewoman.
Here.
Katja Fuchs.
Here.
Lillian Marubo Jack.
Here.
Joel Reyes. Doris Coffey. Cynthia Dewar.
Here.
Laura Lystrup.
Here.
Lisa Cooper Wilkins.
Here.
You have a forum.
Thank you. So we'll move on to the approval of the agenda.
Approved.
Second. So it's been moved to adopt the agenda as presented. Any further discussion, questions? And then we'll do a roll call vote, please.
Heather Brent.
Aye.
Amelia Kong.
Yes.
Jay Langdon.
Aye.
Alinali de la Lobos.
Aye.
David Delgado. J.R. Hall.
Aye.
Chris Salazar. Michael Snyder.
Yes.
The Brave Woman.
Yes.
Katja Fuchs.
Yes.
Lillian Marubo Duck.
Yes.
Joel Reyes. Joyce Coffey. Cynthia Dewar.
Yes.
Noah Lystrup.
Yes.
And Lisa Cooper Wilkins.
Yes.
If the motion passes.
Thank you. Now that we've adopted the agenda, we'll move on to the approval of our September 4th meeting minutes.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and double seconded that we, that we adopt the minutes as presented. Any other discussion, questions, recommendations? All right, hearing none, we'll take a roll call for a minute.
Who seconded it? Seconded.
Official?
Yeah.
Okay.
Heather Brent.
Aye.
Amelia Kong.
Yes.
Jay Langdon.
Aye.
Alinali de la Lobos.
Aye.
David Delgado. J.R. Hall.
Aye.
Maria Salazar Colon. Michael Snyder.
Yes.
Mary Bravewoman.
Yes.
Katja Fuchs.
Yes.
In our room, Doug.
Yes.
Joel Reyes. Joyce Coffey. Cynthia Dewar.
Yes.
Laura Lystrup.
Yes.
And Lisa Kapoor.
Yes.
The motion.
Right. So we are now at the point in the agenda where we will entertain public comments not on the agenda, on items not on the agenda. Do we have public comment? Individuals in the room or on our Zoom?
Yes. I just wanted to make folks aware that we got a report from a faculty member who think it's a phishing scam, asking for multi-factor authentication. The person is coming from is a Gmail account, not a City College account. And I know that the district and AMT are currently finalizing an agreement on that. So I just want to be aware that there shouldn't be anything in place. None that I'm aware of. So if anybody else gets that,
Is it, do you know if it's been reported to the help desk?
I don't know.
Okay.
But, I can follow up with
that. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Other public comments? Yes.
Thank you. So this public comment is coming to you from your friendly neighborhood academic senate president. Those of you who are faculty in the room might have received my call to apply for the credit for prior learning coordinator. And I wanted to just come here today and try to amplify that. You are all leaders on this college. You are all leaders in your respective spaces. And you might be working with folks who could be really great candidates for this position. So I brought the job description here. I brought 10 copies. So if you're interested in taking it and circulating in the spaces where you work, perhaps you know someone who would be really great in furthering this. As some of you might know, Credit for Prior Learning, AKA CPL, it's been really kind of thrown out there as the future. Our veteran students really benefit from some of this, but not just our veteran students. So getting somebody in this role who is able to help students and able to build these rubrics is super crucial. It's a great enrollment management tool. It's just a really, really important way to continue to bring our college into the future. I could talk for a long time about it, but I will just pass around this job description. And please take one if you think you know something would be good for the position.
All right. I will just add, while these are going around, I worked at a community college back east that was sandwiched in between two military bases. So we did a lot of credit for prior learning. And it is amazing how much individuals can receive and sort of speed their way to their degree completion. So all the best. Thank you. Any other public comment? Yes.
Hey, I'm Gari. I'm a student worker at the QRC, and I wanted to make a public comment on the number of hours that student workers receive. I currently work the full 15 hours a week at the QRC, and I am also, like, you know, living by myself, and, you know, like, if the paycheck, like, is, like, honestly, I'm making, like, ends meet, like, paycheck to paycheck, honestly, and, like, I would really like to see, like, the ability to be able to work more hours. I feel like I do have hours that I could be working at the QRC that I can't. And I've also seen that, like, the resource center itself suffers from students not being able to work more than their 15 hours because you're having to fill those shifts with, like, other students, like, that you hired, and, like, those students might not be able to work the shift that you really need covered. And even though a student, like, might already be able to work that shift, like, we don't have enough hours to do that. So that was what I wanted to say. Thank you.
And I'm not sure where there is a presentation about that today, so if you're able to stay for the presentation, it will share information about that. So thank you. Any other public comment? Not seeing any hands raised in person or online. Aurel, did we receive any public comment in advance?
No.
All right. And we didn't receive any public comments in advance. So we will move on now to our next item. And I see that the chancellor has joined us online. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. And I'm sorry that I'm online instead of in person, but I had a Zoom meeting that ended late and I didn't have time to get over there in person. So thank you for being willing to let me be here remotely. I want to, before I give my report, I want to jump down to the kudos and recognition, because then once I give my report, I have to go to City Hall. But I wanted to give a huge shout out to Michael Snyder, both for the amazing Student Health Center that I got to tour the other day. I've worked at many different colleges and never seen quite an impressive Student Health Center like that one. So I know that lots of people obviously contribute to that, but I know that Michael is really the guardian of that. And I was there to swear in new classified Senate officers. So I want to just give a shout out to the classified Senate. Their voice is so important in the work we do, and it was a real pleasure to be able to swear them in. And I want to give kudos to our culinary students, faculty, and staff. I've had the opportunity to dine at the chef's table, at the regular cafeteria, and at the express, whatever it's called, with that their emphasis is on the flatbreads this semester. Highly recommend. It's just amazing how much dedication and work goes into such a quality experience that's available for all of us. So I wanted to give my kudos before I missed my chance. In terms of my report, I was invited on Monday to the Mexican Independence Day El Grito. That was at the, a joint thing with the city. With the mayor at City Hall, as well as the Consul General of Mexico and others. And I was with Will Maines, and it was wonderful because we walked up and sort of elbowed our way in to meet the Consul General. And he looked right at my name tag and said, "Oh, the college with the famous mural. Oh, we're so proud of that. And we're so happy that you have that." So it was wonderful that he knew that without even of course, we had a brochure in our hand to give to him, so he would have found out anyway. But it was great, and I am going this afternoon, which is why I have to go today. Is the mayor's kickoff for Hispanic Heritage Month, and I have been invited to that. So this will be my fifth time stalking the mayor and hoping to get a one-on-one conversation with him. Wish me luck. I'm trying to get City College front and center in his radar for some important conversations. So that's been, you know, a big part of my week. I am also, I just had the pleasure of spending time with the department chair council, and they had a lot of really, I kind of felt like I was doing my chancellor's forum again, because they were asking me some really tough questions, but they were a really welcoming group. I enjoyed my visit to the Associated Students, and I know it, so thank you all for being so warm and welcoming when I was there. Really grateful that the Board of Trustees approved our budget, which is really great news. That gives us a chance to work together to continue to build a sustainability model on campus. I think that would be it, but I'm happy to answer questions.
Other questions for the chancellor?
I just want to shout out to the chancellor, who has agreed to once again host our holiday breakfast, maybe possibly even brunch. And we appreciate that, because that is our time where we can gather as many people, get the annual toy drive for the Family Resource Center, and our student parents the toys that they need. So thank you, chancellor, for agreeing to that. Maybe we can make that an ongoing event. We don't have to beg for it every year.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Other questions from council members for the chancellor? Any members of the public have comments? Seeing any raised hands online or in the room? So thank you so much, Chancellor, for joining us today.
Well, thank you. And VC Cooper, because I'm going to follow up with you afterward, because I didn't get a chance to watch that presentation, and I'm really interested to learn more about the student employment. So I'll follow up with you later.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Fantastic. So, great segue from the chancellor's report, where kudos and recognitions were extended. So now we have an opportunity to do the same. Any council members who would like to share words, recognitions, kudos, or gratitude?
Yes, Vice Chancellor. So I wanted to recognize the Veterans Resource Center.
Sorry, I said Vice Chancellor.
It's okay. I knew it.
All meant. The time.
No worries. I'm not going to correct you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to recognize the Veterans Resource Center, and more specifically, Brian, I guess, for his support of students, whether they're veterans or not. They had an event this week. I think it was an open house. They had food, and students on campus have been dealing with food insecurity. And their event was super welcoming to all students, regardless of whether they identified as veterans or not. And so I just wanted to highlight that because that's not always students' experience on campus. I hear often from students when there's events and there's food and they get told they cannot eat the food because they're not part of that program. So I think it's important to recognize someone when they're doing something that goes above and beyond or is different. So thank you for that.
Council members, yes, the real vice chancellor.
I would like to thank the students that have been vocal at our PTC meeting and at our other spaces in regards to having student employment lab hours be increased from 15 to 20 hours. Your work is being seen, and it's a prime example of today's agenda. One of our new business items on the agenda. So thank you for being present. Thank you for expressing your voice and your concern. And know that we recognize, even though it's overdue, we recognize the work that you've been doing. Thank you.
Council members with words, recognitions, kudos, or gratitudes. I'm looking online. I'm not seeing any. I'll open it up to members of the public who might want to share. Awards, recognitions, kudos, or gratitude here in the audience or online. And not seeing any hands. So we're going to conclude that item and go on to old business discussion of meeting protocols, procedures, meeting modality discussion. And here we had a question last week about the notion of some of our other center sites being considered an acceptable location from which a council member could join a meeting. We talked about the need for that council member to alert us far enough in advance so that the location can be noted on the agenda. Agendas not only have to go out electronically, so via email, and then be posted in our case on board docs, soon to become Diligent, and on our PGC website, but they also need to be physically posted in the space where the meetings are going to happen, not just on the room, but also from an entrance to a building. And so many of us had not been doing that, thinking that the electronic notice was enough. So you will see that we have started to do that. And so if someone is joining from a center location, they would need to do the same. So they would need to be thoughtful about the fact that if they're joining from their office becomes a public location and technically gets posted. So I just say that to say if the person wants to join from a space on the center that might be more suitable for public attendance, that that be a consideration of theirs. And when I made the inquiry to the chancellor about, you know, getting the feedback from legal about that, she had indicated that she had just been through a Brown Act training and assured me that not just that council member, but say if a second council member said, hey, I'm on that site today too, I'm gonna join from that location, that their attendance would also be counted as the quorum. So I just wanted to follow up on that because it was a question that was asked by council member Hoops, who does it come to a question.
I have a follow-up question. So is this to be counted as part of quorum in this alternate location, does that count as one of those five exceptional attendance exemptions, or
it's supposed to count, I thought, but now that you asked the nuance, I gotta go back and check. So we did talk about last time too that the number of exceptions was originally two and it is up to five. I will double check now whether or not that attendance at the alternative location is just counted as quorum, or does it also need to count as one of the five? So I will do that. Yes.
Sorry, I think it may count as teleconferencing under Brown Act.
I think it does too.
Yeah, but I think you're just changing locations.
Yeah. That's what I think, but when you asked it like that, I was like, I'm pretty sure I asked that, but and that is the correct answer, but I just want to double check.
Okay. So just to make sure the correct answer that Heather Brand, the A student, just gave is that it is one of the five exceptional, or no?
No, you're conferencing in and sharing your location. You should still be able to participate.
You should still be able to participate, yeah. But the question is whether or not it counts against one of the five causes. And I think you are saying that it does not.
She's going to double check that.
But I'm going to double check. But I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure that's what that we established before, that it does not count
against the five. I know. But now I'm like, I just want to be sure.
Okay.
Not in a sleep last night. I just make sure. All right. Yes.
Thank you for posting the agenda out at the exterior of the building, and I hope that all our other brown bodies are also able to do that as well. Just one thing that I had mentioned earlier to RL was that when we do post agenda in the exterior, going through the parliamentary training that we've been through as students, one thing that they mentioned is that an example to do is to grab a chair and sit right in front of the agenda. If you're able to read the agenda, that means somebody with a wheelchair access is able to do it. And so that's one of the key factors to keep in mind. It was brought to my attention as well that where it was posted, it's to the side of the access to the ADA. So if somebody with a wheelchair was going to try to see the agenda, they wouldn't be able to because it's on the area where it's not. So just being cautious of that.
Appreciate that reminder. And we're also working on ways to better secure it so that someone can't just take it down, like ways to put it in some type of display also that helps protect it. So, but thank you for the reminder about the inconveniences. Other comments there? I think next week, and we'll send out something to all the standing committee chairs as well. We'll take a peek at our PGC website because we're trying to update it and trying to get standing committees to also update the information that is available on their website. So we'll do that at our next meeting under our standing agenda item there. Any questions from council members or public comment on this item? I'm not seeing any. Did we receive any comment? Nope. All right, so we can move on to new business. And I know that we have had several public comments from folks about student employment, multiple different comments, but the most seems to resonate around what is the allowable number, maximum number of hours that students can work. Some have been about how much is allotted for lab aid funding, and I think that is a different discussion that we will have to ask some of our colleagues in fiscal maybe to help us answer that question. But today it is about what are some of the parameters that guide how students are able to work on campus, whether it is a lab aid position or federal work study position. Really appreciate that we have Guillermo Villanueva here, who oversees financial aid, and Zach Lamb, who helps to oversee student employment at the college. And I will stop talking and let you both present the information that you came to share.
Hi, everyone. I'm Zach Lamb. I'm the Director of Apprenticeships and Instructional Service Agreements, and I also oversee the Student Employment Office. And I don't know, Guillermo, do you want to introduce yourself as well?
Yeah, for those that don't know who I am, Guillermo, Dean of Financial and Special Program. Nice to meet you. Nice knees.
So we wanted to just come in to do, I guess, some level setting and answer some questions about student employment. I did hear, the public comment earlier in the meeting, and, I'm looking forward to sharing a little bit more background about the questions that have been coming up around the hours. But just to start, so everyone understands, the office is really Nanette here. I wanted to include a picture of her and just kind of highlight the work that she does here, which is considerable, right? Coming out of the pandemic, we've been, you know, really ramping up the student employment office and the number of students that we're serving. And so I just wanted to start by giving her a lot of credit for that. So one of the questions that I heard was kind of coming up is like, what is the timing of hiring and like the last day to hire and where does that come from? So, you know, there's kind of different periods throughout the semester. In the beginning, before the semester starts, you can begin working, and that's called early clearance. And it technically starts when a pay period begins before the first workday. This time, this last semester, you know, we didn't have early clearance because the first day of the pay period was also the first day of the semester, because I think we started on the 15th or something like that. And then, of course, the first day of the first of regular workday is the first day of the semester. The last day to hire is two pay periods before the end of the semester. And that's there mostly just to ensure that we have enough time to process all the paperwork and the students have adequate time to work before the end of the semester. Previously, we had a lot of instances where requests to process hires were coming in on the last day or maybe a couple of days before the last day to work. And, you know, then we have to turn things around and the students are not able to work that many hours in that short amount of time. So that's kind of the last day to hire. The final workday is just whatever the last day of the semester is. And then if you want to continue working after the last workday, you can. And that is called intercession. And that basically means you can kind of finish out the pay period that extends beyond the last day of the semester. So any questions about these dates or how they're derived? Okay.
Oh, there is a question, Zach.
Oh, okay. Sorry, it's hard to see because the box is so small for me.
No, it's okay. So it's our student chancellor.
Sorry, I raised my hand at the last second. I was thinking, not so much how the dates are derived, but the ability to work during intercession. Is that ever possible?
The ability to work during intercession?
Yes.
Yes. So You can work intercession and early clearance, so before or after the semester, but it does require the supervisor to fill out some additional paperwork. Just it's pretty minimal, but we just have to kind of record that for our records. But you can work during intercession, but that just means that you're working through the end of the pay period that. How do I explain this? It's if the last day to work does not fall on the last day of a pay period, then you're basically finishing out that pay period. So I'm not sure if you're referring to like after that, like in between semesters.
That is what I'm referring to.
Okay. So that is not, we typically do not do that. I'm not saying it's not possible, but we don't do it right now. And that's because there's I think some challenges with how we would ensure that everybody is getting the support that they need, both the instructor or not the instructor, but the supervisor and the student when, you know, the college is not in session or something like that. Like if you're talking about like over winter break or something.
Okay, and then is this across all positions, Lab Aid, Federal Work Study, and CalWORKs?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, there's another question. Yes.
So I know for the intersection and the early clearance, so like the one that end before after the semester end, is it the early clearance or intersection? That's the intersection, right? That's the intersection. So if you're not enrolling for the upcoming semester, then you're not allowed to work.
Yes, and that's another reason why the working in between semesters is tricky. But for intercession, we define intercession as only that time period when the semester has ended, but the current pay period has not. And so if you're talking about that intercession, that is allowable because we're just kind of extending it through the existing pay period. So even if a student was to not enroll the following semester, it would be okay because we're just kind of extending it through a pay period that the student has already been cleared to work in. But if you're talking about intercession, as the previous question was referring to it, in that time between semesters, then that's another reason why it gets a little bit tricky there.
Because for the last summer, I didn't enroll, so I was not allowed to work over that period just because I'm not enrolled for the course over the summer, even though I already enrolled for the fall. I was not allowed to work just because of that. So is it okay to do that way? Because I don't feel okay with that way. Like, why Eastern for sure would enroll for the fall semester? Why they have to refine to enroll for the summer just to work for the intercession?
Because you have to be a student to do student.
I can speak on that. On the federal work study portion of it, for those that are eligible for work study, federal work study, the Department of Education requires for students to be enrolled in units, right? And for us to go ahead and process any type of payments or approve. And it's a minimum requirement of units, right? So if just not enrolled in any units, and that's when we say, unfortunately, we can't go ahead and extend that. What makes it easier, I would say, with between federal in the federal work study program for intercession versus like what you're describing for summer, because we're looking at terms, right? We're not looking at intercession; we're just looking at terms per se, right? So the intercession literally overlaps fall with in our case spring, right?
Yeah.
Other schools that are either quarter system or maybe their semester system, but they have a winter session, so yeah. that's why it's allowable during that time frame, right? Versus like you're not enrolled technically in the summer, and that's where the challenge is, where the Department of Education only allowed. But that's on the federal work study component, right? So that's where it's. I understand what SAC is trying to kind of explain, but it's where the tricky part of it, and then that's where we unfortunately have to apply the policy. Yeah, cool. Yes. We would love to do that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a great idea, but
and I don't think we have an academic term that is a winter intercession, which is why that one again is a little bit easier than say summer, where you being a student who's actively enrolled and then having a student-based job that kind of goes to you.
Because technically, our spring. I mean, we're off for that Christmas week. Everything's closed, right? Literally, the spring begins the week after we come back. So that's why spring,
Sorry, go ahead.
So the example of, I guess, would be for employees here, particularly classified, for the spring semester, they would start off, like, let's say, January 2nd, January 3rd.
And that's the calendar that was created. Obviously, they had come to an agreement through the class standpoint. It'll be January 2nd, right? It depends on what the specific day January 2nd falls, right?
Yeah.
So if it falls on
the weekend. So more or less. So what I'm trying to see is, like, as far as for students, that we don't start our semester till about August 18-ish. What happens? What happens between those January 2nd, 3rd through August 18th? What would that be considered?
Oh, are you saying January
18th? So January 3rd through about January 18th.
Okay.
So about those 2 weeks before official spring semester starts.
That's what letters consider intercession. So it's literally fall rolling over into spring. So it's allowed. We've had it.
Okay.
And
that time. I was just going to say that time period before semester starts, there is some of that that may fall in an early clearance, right? But again, it just goes by the pay period. So the pay period, if the pay period that the first day of work falls into begins before the first day of work, then you could, in theory, start a little bit earlier, but it's not going to be that much earlier. And it varies from semester to semester just based on the calendar and the pay period calendar.
But here's the challenge, though, that I think everyone needs to understand as well, especially when you are in a participant of the Federal Work Study Program, is there's a specific allocation that's given to that student per academic year, right? In our institution, it's $4,000 for the academic year. So if you start maximizing, utilizing 15 hours a week, then you might go ahead and run out of those, not run out, I mean, because that's what's literally allocated for that specific student, right? So you have $4,000, $2,000 that's, for the fall, $2,000 for the spring, right? Anything that, once you have gotten compensated for the $2,000, either for fall or spring, then literally you can't continue to work because there's no more funds to go ahead and cover it for you to get compensated, right? That's where the tricky part is, where some students may choose not to work during intersession. Because literally that's how the allocation is on the federal work study side, right? So yeah, that's the tricky part.
I guess the other question slash point I was going to make was capacity-wise in different offices that hire students, like sometimes that January 2nd, 3rd, those first few days back, are there the folks in place to do all the things and process the paperwork? So I'm imagining there could be some slowness during that time as there's different staffing levels during that period. So.
Yeah, because not every classified is that.
Right.
The calendars may be different. And also, I would say that if the student is new and they haven't had their TV clearance, we're not even open. I mean, I'm checking forms, but people would have to do outside a TV testing, and there are no nurse practitioners checking for outside stuff until the actual semester starts. So if they were actually coming from winter, spring, they would be okay. But if they were a new student who wanted to start working earlier, they wouldn't.
Yes, I just wanted to speak on the Federal Work Study Program as someone who received it last year. I'm not a federal work study worker as of now, but I did actually, while still on 15 hours, like still run out of my allocation last semester. So I feel like, staying at the number of hours would be like, better for fund distribution. Feels like it's already happening. So like, I just, I felt like yeah, that's all I had to say. Like it's all it's yeah, it happened last semester to me.
Gotcha. Yes. I think there's public comment for this later too, right? But I'll just say quickly what I'm hearing is we're hearing a lot about the federal work study side of things. And since I actually am one of the few students that was in direct contact with the student that brought this forward, probably one of the only students in this room that's been in contact with that student, DC from the Link Center. And we're more generally concerned about lab aid side of
No,
things.
as
Okay,
so,
perfect.
yeah,
But I understand everything that's being said about work study, but a lot of the students right now are more worried about lab aid students because I don't want to say work study students have it better. There's struggles that a lot of work study students go through. They're on it for a reason. They're low income, they're whatever, for whatever reason, income reason they are, but I think.
I think they're just
Yeah.
similar institutional
Yeah.
practices and policies for both. And so, yeah, so they're just explaining all the differences. But that's okay. Yeah, because that's why Zach's here to answer all those questions too.
Yeah,
Yes.
and I will say that we try to keep we don't want to have like two separate systems. So a
Yep.
lot of the practices of federal work study, we kind of mirror for the rest of the students. And obviously that's not always the case in terms of like the funding amount and the federal requirements, but in terms of the expectations and the parameters, we try and keep it similar so that everybody is kind of working it within the same system.
Can I ask one more question on this federal work study? If the allocation is about 2,000 max per semester, and students are able to work 15 hours a week, or at least currently at the max of 15 hours per week, wouldn't their federal work study or job opportunities finish at the end of 7 weeks?
That's correct.
And would so that's even on an 18-week semester.
Yeah.
And they do call it a maximum. Some students don't work 15 hours a week. So they could spread it out longer, but I get it. Some students have the capacity and absolutely need the money. So I hear you, but that's the federal allocation that's provided at this time. We hope
And we've seen, and I'm sorry, I know this is not part of the discussion, but we've seen a heavy increase on federal work study requests, like so many applicants requesting. That's a different issue that we got in financial aid right now. I have to say, I'm not sure we're going to be able to handle it. It's so significant right now how many students are requesting federal work study. Obviously, we're kind of like in a business practice, first come, first serve now.
All right. I will just ask really quickly if the council member can do an extension of time on this presentation.
Hello.
We've spent time.
How much time? Well, 15 minutes. 20 minutes. So, yeah. Any objection? All right. So, consensus, we're extending time by 10 minutes. Okay. I'm sorry. I see you have a
Talking about the federal work study increase in applicants, I think that's because the lab aid positions were cut. So there aren't as many lab aid positions available anymore.
Security.
And also because food insecurity in the city and on campus too.
Well, yeah, there's multiple factors. We see it on the applications of everyone applying for
Yeah.
what exactly,
Reasons are.
why they're applying.
Yeah.
All right. Zach, you can go ahead. Sorry.
No, this is a good discussion. I think this was the other main topic that was that I heard we wanted to discuss, which is the cap on the hours per week. So there's a couple different reasons that this cap exists. Of course, we want to encourage a healthy balance between school and work. Although, as the public commenter earlier was saying, and many other students I know, the money is needed. But this is just part of the kind of rationale for the cap. Another reason is to ensure that more students are able to access the funds. So, with limited amounts of funding, the college made a decision to ensure that more people could access it by putting a cap on how much any individual could access. And then, the other reason is there is kind of a hard cap in terms of the number of hours that somebody could work, which would trigger like benefits, with the state, which we can't, afford to take on that obligation. There was also some confusion that I wanted to clarify, and Guillermo may be able to help me clarify this as well. But there used to be an exemption for CalWORK students who could work additional hours beyond that 15 hour cap. But that was part of a program that no longer exists, where students who were CalWORKs eligible could draw from a different pot of money and work off-site at a different location, using those different funds to work an additional like 5 hours a week. But that pot of money is gone and the program is gone. And so that exception, I guess it had been left in place because, technically, if the program were ever to come back, right, it would still be allowable. But it's been gone for so long that at this point, I think it's just creating more confusion. So we're just going to kind of take that out of the next update to the student handbook. So I don't know, Guillermo, if there's anything else about that program that you want to add.
Yeah, just briefly, a little bit of content about the history of why this topic is here. Tamworth has two different entities, right? One is housed in the community college system, and the other one is in the county, right? So that's where, you know, the partnership is required that the county and the community colleges are to work together, the two Tamworth offices. We have our own Tamworth work study program through the state chancellor's office. And then at that moment, the county also had their own work study program, which is what we had in the past. Historically, is we were, you know, our students, our Tamworth students were allowed to work 15 hours a week here at the institution. And through the county, which was a different type of class because we had a classification at one moment, those students were allowed to work, you know, at Arriba Juntos in this case, you know, here in the city, right? So they worked in Arriba Juntos to do exercise their duties at that site, but it was funded by the county. It was not really funded by the institution, right? So that's why we see this kind of policy in place, or that, you know, our only Tamworth students were allowed to do more than 15 hours a week at that moment, right, here at the college. So that program on the county side was discontinued due to federal funding cut, because, you know, obviously that's where that money was used for. I would say maybe back in 2018 now, 2018. So it's been quite some years now since that program was continued by the county. So we had to literally stop in this situation.
Zach, what is that number that triggers the pension benefits?
I would have, let me take a look. It's tricky because I have the slideshow up. So like, let me navigate away from the slideshow for a sec. Sorry. Unless Guillermo, do you know, off the top of your head?
I don't remember. I don't have numbers in my head. Not that one right now.
Yeah, I can
have to check with payroll. Just
we can check. Yeah, we can definitely check. You know, payroll most likely will have that accurate number, because this is more of a payroll question, to be honest. Okay. Than what student employment would be able to provide in this situation. So, sorry, Zach. I know you got put on the spot, but yeah, this is more of a payroll situation, because you know, when we're talking about benefits. Yeah, that's out of the student employment work.
Thank you for the question. That was definitely one of the questions I had, and it should have been included in the slides, as well as teasing out like the difference between LAVA, Federal Work Study, and CalWORKs. And so thank you, Student Vice Chancellor, for teasing out exactly how much Federal Work Study, like how far into the semester you can get in terms of hours, because I did not realize that until today. Just as a student worker myself on campus, I think students should have the autonomy to sort out their school and work schedule and balance. And really, a healthy balance is being able to eat and learn. And on 15 hours a week, you can't do that. And I just want to say that other California community colleges do allow their students to work more than 15 hours a week. So I feel like this is something specific to CCSF, maybe because we don't have the financial means to go around. But I know that State Center allows their student workers 19 hours a week, San Mateo County, 20 hours a week, Peralta, 20 hours a week, College of Marin, 25 hours a week. And I don't know if this is specific to Federal Work Study or LabAid. I'm assuming probably LabAid, and they are able to work in excess of that over breaks. So I guess what we refer to as intercession. And I know that federal guidelines recommend that student workers work no more than 20 hours per week. But I think what students today are asking for is comparable to what exists in other districts in the area, especially living in one of the most expensive places in the state. And I think this is why this is coming up, And this also ties into the issue of food insecurity. Mm-hmm. So students can't access free food on campus, but they also can't work enough hours to be able to feed themselves. So I think this is why this is coming up. And so I just want to make sure that while we're on the topic of this issue, if there's a possibility to do something different, I think we should.
Something I just want to highlight that I haven't heard in this conversation yet is a lot of the reason why this is coming up is, yes, we want equal hours to other that are comparable to other colleges, but if you are a Cal Fresh recipient, a SNAP EBT benefit, and if you are an able-bodied adult without dependents, so this is someone that's between 18 and 52, as of 2025, you're required to work 20 hours. And I think there's some, I'm not well-versed in this, I'll admit, but I think there are some requirements or exceptions you can get out of. Again, one, if you're disabled, I think there's something regarding financial aid, please correct me. Anyone here, please correct me. So we're really worried about those students that don't qualify for federal work study. So those lab aid students, because I'm going to put myself on blast. I am a CalFresh recipient myself, and I have been ineligible for CalFresh for at least a year, at least 2 years, because I am not meeting 20 hour work requirement. So a lot of the students, I think this is also an enrollment issue. A lot of the students are probably going to choose to go to work and work more hours or fail their classes if they're in school, because now they're going to have to have their lab aid job and an additional job outside of campus to meet the 20 hour work requirement. And then my last question, I hope gets answered either now or at a future meeting. The work about the school balance thing? I really wonder who decided that for students. And because I agree with a lot of the other students who are like, you know, I should be able to decide what's good for me. Because if I can't eat, like I've skipped class because I can't eat. So
thank you for that. So Dean, go
ahead. Well, thank you for bringing the enrollment to the table. I was going to bring also registration to the table because we hear from students that schedules need to be so spread out just to get classes, and that doesn't afford you the ability to go get a job outside. So you have to, you're going to have to work with what you have, and that's in between classes. And then we have students that, because we don't have more than 15 hours for the reasons that were mentioned, that we're still questioning the reasons that were mentioned, they have to have a second, third, fourth job. And so all these different narratives and equations, and if you notice in the room, it's students, because students are facing this day in and day out, and that's what we hear, and that's what we bring to the table. And we bring in, lots of students have been bringing it up to our resource center spaces and the spaces that might have an opportunity for support, and it's not just you know, this, but it's still interconnected.
I think we're going to be doing some more research on this, because as I hear Heather saying, Marin, you know, allows 25 hours, San Mateo allows 20 hours. There's something deeper, because obviously in our district, we are literally in conjunction, we have to like work in conjunction with the policies that the county has.
Yep.
So I think that's really the bigger research that has happened in order for like literally this institution to start moving forward to like really identifying what the, you know, the hours would be, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I definitely appreciate all the comments and the recognition that there are different things going on in different districts. So one of the things that I would like to ask is if I can, one, we had just made a commitment to find out the information from payroll, but can I ask that I have an opportunity to meet with Zach and with the Dean G to talk about, like, specifically if there's some constraints for our district for why we do 15 hours versus being comparable to the other districts at the 20 hours, so that we could come back ideally at our next meeting to resume this conversation with more details about the specificity around 15 hours. Because I agree with you that just saying work balance is the reason this routine is not sufficient, that there has to be something that sort of hooked us into the 15, but if there is the ability for us to consider more.
There's some homework that we need.
So,
well, can I just
chime in real quick? You speak and then I see to be in fit.
Okay.
Go ahead, Zach.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to say you certainly can have as much of my time as you need, but you know, I've looked into this as well, I think, because of, you know, some of the comments that I've heard from students. And you know, I'm sure Dean Villanueva is also willing to give his time, but we need, I think, some input from other parts of the college because we're not experts in this.
And that's what I'm suggesting, Zach, that when we meet offline, that we are able to sort of meet with some additional decision makers. So absolutely. And then
I just wanted to speak on behalf of BSU. Currently the president of the VSU, and many of our students, actually a couple of our officers weren't able to come and apply for classes because they had to work. Because based on the limited time that they could be a student worker and needing to fulfill more hours to bring in more income to deal with the food insecurity they're going through specifically in their community in the Fillmore, but then also food insecurity just in the general San Francisco population, in addition to the cuts that have been happening citywide to a lot of our POC organizations that do provide these off-campus services to our students. So I think that's even more of a reason that City College needs to double down, revisit what we were doing previously and base what's going on right now in the city and the scarcity that's happening in the city and the fact that students have to one commute here to school already. They're paying for that, right? So that's coming out of their finances as well, the ability to have to pay to come to school. Many who are commuting over an hour to come from other parts of the city to come to school, right? Because they can't afford to live over here closer to school either, right? And then to think that they also have to then leave school, leave their campus job, go somewhere else to commute and spend more money commuting to another job, right? And then commute again to either come back to school to continue their classes or to then go home, right? That's a few more commutes. So I'm just like wanting the council to consider all of these different expenses that affect the student when they can't fulfill and get more of what they need here on campus. Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to give another information. I'm an international student. So beyond the policy for us as an international student, we are allowed to work for 20 hours on campus. And CCNF is the only campus I know only provide 15 hours. When the very first time I come to CCNF and in 2023, I have been working and asked a lot with the office from the student employment, and they say CCNF only provide 15 hours. And I say this is very weird because the policy provide to us say we are allowed to do 20, but we only have 15 here. There is no way for us to work five hours extra more, even though the policy say we can do that. But just because CCF doesn't provide the platform for us, and it just disappeared just because of that. And I don't think this is fair enough for students. So like student general always say, certain struggle to meet with the very basic need. And just 5 hours doesn't make a difference in our life, to be honest. But whatever help can help a little bit. So if this is something CCL can gently do, because that's really matter to us. Don't say about work-life balance when we cannot even provide a portrait only 5 hours. And for someone like me, like international student, I have to be heavily rely on the scholarship because I only have 15 hours. So I have to do a lot of work, make sure I get straight A so I can apply for whatever the scholarship available to me, just because we cannot give me 5 extra hours more. So I really want to probably bring back this topic again next week until we can discuss to have a solution.
Thank you. Thanks, Amelia, for highlighting the impact on international students specifically, since there is literally no other jobs that international students can do except for this one job. Of working on campus. But I was wondering if there's a follow-up to today, if we can know the number of student workers we have on campus and the different categories, either CalWORKs, Federal Work Study, and LabAid, how much we're currently spending on the student workers that we have, and if we are indeed able to increase it to not exceed the 20, but maybe to be at the 20, how much more we would be spending. I'm curious about that.
I would like to second that. I'm just curious about the budget. I'm concerned that the budget office is going to complain and less people are going to go to work. Mm-hmm. If people get the additional hours. I mean, I want everyone to get their hours, but I'm just seeing, I'm looking at the increase in jobs on campus. We're at 1,100 now. I don't know if those are federal work studies or both. Maybe both. I just saw Zach share. Christian workers, is that both federal? Okay, so 11 and 12
are probably the largest.
So I'm curious because I would want to make sure that the budget office is not going to give us a hard time as well, and then have less people be able to find the jobs.
I'm curious. Sets the rate. I've noticed that you guys talk a lot about hours, but the hourly, we don't need more hours if the rate goes higher. So where's that set?
The hourly rate, I can answer that. It comes out the pipeline from the state, one, and then second, because we are in San Francisco, so literally, at least we have to follow San Francisco minimum wage.
The board, I believe, passed a resolution pegging our wage to the local minimum wage. So that's where we get that from.
So I'm just thinking, when you talk about the idea of maybe increasing rates is going to affect budget, so that the other variable is not just how many hours it could do, but it's also rate. So if you're going to talk budget, how all that, that should be an important decision point too.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate everybody's comments and contributions, and we will bring this back and circle back to have a conversation where we can bring more of those details that have been requested. Okay. The next meeting. Thank you. All right. So we are going to thank you, Zach. Be in touch. Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Now move on. Sorry. I didn't ask if there were public comment on this item. Any additional public comment?
Even. Did was everything that was
in the room and the online. I do as well. All right. So we're gonna move on to our standing committee updates from the planning committee. And I see that Dr. Murphy is here. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy to be here and share on behalf of the planning committee where we are with last year's objectives and where we're headed with this year's committee objectives. And I see several of you in the document. Right now it is, the link is on the website in board docs. So I'm gonna start by talking about the status of our planning committee objectives from last year for 2024-25. Happy to report that we have fully completed the first two objectives. So the first one, recalibrating our institution set standards and stretch goals with an equity emphasis. So the institution set standards and stretch goals are something that we're required to have, but we also want them to be useful to us. We're required by accreditation to have them, but part of the recalibration was because they really had the way that they had been set previously was no longer useful. So the planning committee worked along with Student Equity Strategies Committee as part of collegial governance. So this involved both participatory and collegial governance. And those new standards and stretch goals were endorsed. They were presented to the board and ultimately accepted by the chancellor based on a recommendation from this council. So thank you very much, council, for helping to move that forward. Those new standards and stretch goals were then in turn part of the basis for looking at the college's mission and vision statements. Those had been due to be revised. There were some areas that the college was really in agreement about, but just hadn't had time to really go through the full process. And we did complete that in the spring. And so the updated mission and vision statements were approved by the board on May 29th. Mm-hmm. And a couple things to note there. There is an improved emphasis on equity as well as a clear commitment to non-credit. So those were two things that were really very important in the update process. And the other was really making sure that we weren't using dated language and just to reduce the verbiage overall to improve clarity. And you'll see that I have a note here that is in maroon, I guess you might call this a deep red, that both of these items are really important to the next objective that we had for 2024-25. This objective, I've identified it as pending, or the planning committee has identified it as pending. We do have some things in place, such as the new institution set standards, stretch goals, our updated mission and vision, but we're really still trying to figure out with our new permanent chancellor what the process and timing for our new education master plan will be and what the name for the new education master plan will be. So I have a note here at the bottom inviting all of you to participate in suggesting what we might call it. There's a desire to move away from the word master. So institutional education plan was one option, education strategic plan, et cetera. So if anybody has any suggestions, feel free to put them in the chat or contact me. We will be looking for those. And actually one possible direction would be to have a combined education and facilities plan. That's not necessarily typical, but some colleges do that. And I know that there is a need to look at our facilities plan with the new buildings that have come online and whatnot. So we want to make sure at the very least that the EMP and the FMP, the facilities master plan, are kept in concert. The other thing that I call out here on behalf of the planning committee is that comprehensive program review is moving forward, and that will inform our the successor to the current education master plan. And then the last objective that the planning committee has, and this is really an ongoing objective, is to make sure that all of the college's major plans, so the technology plan, the adult education plan, the strong workforce plan, all of those big college plans stay connected to the education master plan or whatever it is that we call it in the future, to really maintain and strengthen the integration in our planning system. So that is the report on last year's objectives. And I want to direct your attention to the second page, which is the work ahead. So we've had one meeting so far this semester. Our next meeting is coming up on October 6th. And the focus so far, and we'll be bringing this back to you in a formal form of 25-26 objectives. So you might consider these our proto objectives or the provisional objectives. So first off, receiving input on a draft policy for institutional effectiveness. This is actually related to those institution set standards and stretch goals. So we've recalibrated them, but now we really need to use them and use them in an ongoing way. And that's something that we have drafted up in a draft board policy. And I'll be bringing that forward to constituent groups for review and input and taking that through the board policy steps. Updating descriptions of our integrated planning system. It's been a while since we have touched that, and there have been some changes. So we want to make sure that it's fresh, that it's clear, particularly as we head into this next phase of planning, because we want to make sure that folks feel invited in to that process and that we're communicating as clearly as we can. Planning sometimes can feel very bureaucratic, very wonky, if you will. And so we want to make sure that it is an inviting process. And then the last bullet there is focusing on the integrated with regard to planning, really leaning into the integration. And I mentioned a moment ago, comprehensive program review. The college is about to kick off for the instructional departments in particular, the phase one of comprehensive program review. Student affairs is also going to be engaging in that process with a slightly offset timeline because we needed to focus on the instructional departments first. And all of that really informs our other plans in that bottom-up kind of way of hearing from the departments, the offices, the services, where they're headed, where they see gaps, and we can develop a collective conversation around those issues. And as I noted, this is not strictly within the planning committee's purview. Very pleased to share that the chair of the program review committee, which is part of collegial governance under the Academic Senate, is a member of the planning committee. So we are working hard on integration. I also attend the program review committee so we can really work closely together on moving these efforts forward. And that is my report. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dean Murray. Are there any council members with questions? Also online. Are there any members of the public with questions or comments? Well, thank you for your leadership and the great work that is happening. Planning. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Okay, so we are now at the point in the agenda. I'll just say really quickly, too, that we have reached out to all standing committees to request that they come. In some instances, they will still need to give us some end of year updates from 24-25 on how they met their objectives. And at this point, they are going to be starting to work with their committees on 25-26. Objectives, and we have proposed a schedule by which they come to share those for the remainder of the semester. So we will be getting regular updates. You certainly are able to make requests for, you know, special information from those committees outside of their objective, them sharing their objectives. So just wanted to remind you of that. We also already have future agenda items, and the next item that will be coming as presentations, but certainly will entertain additional future agenda items that you would like considered. Yes, student teachers.
I have a question. Where at the college do we make sure that we're complying with legislation that comes down by the dates that we're supposed to? Is that something that this body focuses on?
As it affects the APs and BPs? Is that the question?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I'm sure maybe something would need to be incorporated, but for instance, Assembly Bill 2033 from the 2023-24 legislative cycle requires that California community colleges have at least one location where students can purchase food with an EBT card.
Right.
And we're supposed to be in compliance with that effective the 1st of September, mm-hmm. and we don't have them in place. Mm-hmm. But I often find that when legislation comes down, we don't meet the dates.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, is that something we talk about here?
We can talk about that here. And typically the area who is impacted in terms of implementation is often working on it in the background. So I don't know that there is one area college that says, hey, you didn't, right? But it's a great question, and I will also go back.
Okay, I'm just thinking about it in the vein of the whole food insecurity discussion and then and students not being able
to. And I know that we have been actually working on that one, and we haven't resolved it.
So they sign them in that solution.
Okay, all right. So I'll bring that back. Any other items? You are always welcome to send future agenda items to the PGC email account or let Arelle and myself know at least a week in advance of the meeting so that the agenda review committee also has a chance to consider the item. And with that, are we ready to entertain a motion?
Yes. We asked facilities to come. We haven't heard.
So we'll follow up. There was a not an ability to come for this particular meeting, but yes. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All right. So by acclamation, we are adjourned.
Thank you for your time.
I'm sitting.